Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a show where we try to cover the news in video game and the video game industry from the past couple of weeks. I am Patrick, and today I am a very Nordic version of Patrick because I am in Finland after a week spent in Russia. So with the adjunction of Umberto from Italy and me being French, I think this is the most international Pixel show we've ever had.
Hi, Patrick.
Hey, Umberto. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm pretty good. I'm not like in some crazy country. I'm just in old Italy, but that's good enough.
That's crazy for me. It's insane. I was in Rome last year, and we were eating ice cream every day. That was like insanity.
So I suppose you have been in Italy in summer or spring.
Yeah. In June, in Rome, in
okay,
June.
You know, it was. Cool.
I had heard about the ice cream in Rome, but I wasn't ready for, you know, all of the crazy flavors and all of the insane things. It was really nice. Like they had like 30 different flavors with, like sneakers and candy bars and like, it was
and
great.
Cheese and basil. Yeah. But if you tried the ice cream, you tried the best of Italy. So you can just.
I'm done.
There's,
I'm done.
There's nothing
with
left out.
Well, you were telling me that you had tasted the biting cold of Finland.
In
February.
Yeah, exactly. It was a couple of years ago for a press trip. It was for Red Wing Trials Evolution, mm-hmm. And when landing, there was so much snow that I was thinking, oh, we will never land here. Because usually in Italy, when we have like 10 centimeters of snow, we just don't land. We wait. But still, with like 2 meters of snow, they just don't care. So okay.
Yeah, my wife, who's Finnish, usually laughs very loudly when in Paris we have a couple of centimeters of snow and everything stops.
Exactly.
All right, so we're here to talk about video games, and there aren't a huge amount of enormous pieces of news today, but there are lots of small announcements, and some of them are somewhat important, including some speculation. We're going to be talking about Lego, about Nintendo, about Capcom and Ultra Street Fighter 4, which I was looking forward to on PlayStation 4, and yeah. And a little bit of The Witcher, Splatoon maybe. I don't know if you've tried Splatoon. I haven't.
No, I played it. I didn't play the final version, but I played maybe 7-8 hours of the preview code and during some press trips. So yes, I played it.
All right. So you can tell us a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. But first, a kind of semi-surprise announcement of something that could be really important. We heard rumors about this last week, but it was confirmed yesterday. Lego is releasing a Minecraft competitor called Lego Worlds, and it's a very wide, open world sandbox game. It's available in early access on the PC for $15, and the full release is not going to be until 2016. So they're really going the Minecraft route of trying to make the game with a lot of feedback from the community and constructing it. Constructing it. Get it? with the community's help. Minecraft is an enormous success, and as we know, Mojang was bought by Microsoft a few months ago. Does this have any chance of succeeding, or is it basically Minecraft has captured the market for this specific type of thing, and is it doomed?
First, it was pretty much a surprise also for me. So this morning I woke up, it just popped up in my Steam account. So I'm pretty happy because later today I will play the game. And
Wait. Do you have one of those fabled press Steam accounts gets everything?
Yes, exactly.
Oh my God! So okay, I have to do a small part.
Actually now changed. So before it was just you wait and the game just pop up. Now you need to request the game, but it's basically the same. You just press a button and that's it.
Okay. And it used to be that at the beginning of Steam, they would distribute press accounts that would get all the games. Mm-hmm. They don't do that anymore. They did it for a little while, but in the industry, everyone knows about those very lucky early journalists that got these types of accounts. And apparently, initially, you would just email Doug Lombardi if you were important enough, and you would get an account. But now it's gone. So yeah, when we try
every now and then to ask more of those accounts, but it's pretty much impossible now. So
yeah, sorry. So go ahead. You're
yeah, yeah. That. So as you said, I think. I think it's pretty much impossible to just replicate the success of Minecraft, because it's just too big. It's the World of Warcraft of the building genre. So I don't know, it's impossible, but I think they will be happy just to break even and make money. So I think they don't need the same numbers Minecraft has, but at the same time I think we'll be successful, because I mean, why not? It's Minecraft with the Lego name. So it's I was checking this morning some reviews on Steam, and it's pretty should be pretty good actually. So yeah, I think will be a good success, but I think it will not be like 20 plus millions copies, because that's just insane. That's just Minecraft. So
It's funny. Lego is taking a very interesting approach to all of their, culture properties. We've seen the Lego movie, which surprisingly was very good.
Super good, yes.
Yeah. And it was good in a way that was very genuine. It captured what Lego meant to people and to imagination. And now they're attacking the Skylanders, there's this silly name for those Skylanders, Amiibo, Disney Infinity types of games. It's Toys to Life, which honestly, I don't really like the name, but fine, whatever. It's the name. So they're getting into the Toys to Life market as well. And with this, they're getting into the building market. But they seem to be doing it with a very, for any other company, I would say, well, they're doing copycat thing and they're just trying to do to check box. But for Lego, I think there is a chance that they're going to be genuine enough and really interested into the product that they're going to get something out of it. I would say a counterexample would be, surprisingly, the way Marvel is approaching video games is very, let's do tons of crappy games and maybe one of them will be a little bit less crappy, but we'll make money in the process, so whatever. Lego doesn't seem to be doing that, and all of their games have been very fun, and children can enjoy them, adults can enjoy them, and I can absolutely see parents, as they do enjoy Minecraft with their kids, they could even enjoy Lego even more with their kids if it's well done. So I think it might not be a success as Minecraft is, because as you were saying, that's kind of impossible at this point. Yeah, but could be something.
Sure. That's I think the same thing. And also in regards of Dimensions, Lego Dimensions, the Skylander like Lego game, I think it will be pretty cool. So I was a little sad to know that in Italy will not come out.
Oh,
at least not soon.
Hmm. Yeah, Italy is the second wave.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Another surprise, something that we didn't really know anything about, and that popped up yesterday, I think, was the Nintendo Direct Micro. It was pretty funny. It was, I can't remember his name, Nintendo of America's I think, director of marketing. But he did a very small Nintendo Direct that lasted for about 15, 20 minutes. That was following a Japanese Nintendo Direct that was a little bit more sizable the day before. But basically, it addressed those games for the West. And there were a number of small announcements. You know, it was... I think I keep saying this with the Nintendo Directs. It's so corny and so silly, it's become cute and funny by now. When you have Iwata in front of his white background, it's just very good. You know, you feel like Nintendo has a good heart. Of course, it's always marketing. But you feel like they have a good heart when they're doing things like that. And in this one, it was a video with... this person on a desk and having a tiny voice because it was a Nintendo Direct, right? So a Nintendo Direct Micro. So it was kind of funny. But are you still there?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, okay, yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There was a weird sound and I wasn't sure.
No, I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, so it was kind of cute, and they announced a bunch of games. I'm going to go through them rather quickly, but the first one was a new Chibi-Robo game. And for this one especially, my Twitter feed exploded with people saying, oh, woohoo, a new Chibi-Robo game. And honestly, I hadn't really ever heard of Chibi-Robo. I think it was a GameCube, right? Okay. It was a GameCube game, I think. Okay. From 2006 or something, and then this one is Chibi-Robo Ziplash, which seems to be a little bit more action oriented than the original one. And they have an amiibo with it, which, as always, you know, the Americans get crazy for this.
But honestly, me too. So
yeah, you haven't really heard of this either, right?
Yeah, I don't care if I hear new amiibo, I'm happy enough.
So. So wait, do you mean you like the amiibos or?
Yeah. Ah. They're so good. I mean, I really like just the toy. The toy is so good. We can talk for weeks about how helpful will be to Nintendo games, but toys are just so good that yes.
I guess you're one of those people who likes toys. You're exactly. Not the only one. I feel in the minority, honestly. But yeah. And you know, the strange thing is the capacity that people have for hating on Nintendo and the amiibos for their availability. And I understand, you know, they're super difficult to get, a lot of them. And Amazon was doing this weird, crazy, like half an hour, portion for each new amiibo where you could order them at that point during that half hour, and there was a whole night where you could do that, and still people go out and buy all of them. But anyway, I've given up trying to understand the logic behind it, and I know that, you know, just like I renounced my hate for, not my hate, but my disdain for classic nostalgia Kickstarters when Bloodstain came out. It's still doing super well, by the way. It's above 3 million. I'm sure at some point someone will release a toy to life or something, and I'll just jump in and curse the heavens for not having them available enough. Then there was Dr. Mario Miracle Cure. It will be available on June 11, so that's really a very quick turnaround. It seemed like just the classic Dr. Mario, which is a Tetris copy, basically.
Yeah, clone. Yeah, I honestly never got the the cool of Dr. Mario, of Mario as a doctor, but the puzzle game was pretty cool on the Game Boy, so well enough, I suppose. I will not play it probably, but June 11 maybe will not too busy, so maybe it will be the perfect game for the A3.
Yeah, exactly. So. It's, you know, you have a long plane trip ahead of you, so maybe it can work.
Maybe
there's. I miss a little bit of those games. I remember playing the one on PlayStation Portable on PSP, the musical one. Oh God, how can I not remember the name?
Luminous,
there you go. It was such a good game. And I would play, you know, Puyo Puyo back in the day, and all of those games, but Luminous was so great, and it was so sad because my PlayStation Portable was basically a Luminous machine. That was the only game I would play on it.
But you can play it on Xbox, and it was released in many versions.
So yeah, now it's available for you know, for all of those games, there is, at first you think they're very simple and very easy to understand, but there is a point where you switch to understanding the combo system and the internal logic behind those games, and they usually become a lot better. And so I'm sure, you know, Dr. Mario is no different.
Yeah.
Bravely Default Second Layer, actually Bravely Second and Layer, is the sequel to Bravely Default, and it will come. It was confirmed in North America and Europe for 2016. It's already out in Japan. There was very little doubt it would come out, but it's good to have the confirmation.
And the first one was just so good. I don't know if you played the first one, but I really enjoyed it.
I played it. Actually, I went to I got a second 3DS because I got my first 3DS a couple of years ago, played the two Mario games that I wanted, and then sold it because I hadn't used it during an entire trip to the US. And I figured, well, if I'm not using it, then whatever. And then other games came out that made me want to get to play them. So I bought a second 3DS. I was very ashamed, but you know. And then I thought, you know, I'm going to buy the games that everyone raves about. And Bravely Default was among them. And I thought I'm going to get them secondhand because it's been out for a year. And it was like, you know, €5 cheaper than the new version. And I went to the clerk, to the store clerk, and I was like, dude, what the hell? It's like €5 less, really? Or €10? I thought it would be a lot less. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that the guy told me that ended up convincing me was, well, it's Bravely Default. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay, well, I guess I must get it. So I played for about, I don't know, 5-10 hours. It was good. It was enjoyable. I didn't go to the end, but...
Yeah, I think it's one of those games that sometimes Square release that you really think, okay, those are smaller games, but that's really what I want from a new Final Fantasy game. And Square keeps trying to do strange new things on Final Fantasy. Sometimes maybe you just want the same old school JRPG, and that's what Bravely Default was. So I really enjoyed it, and it was artistically, it was so good.
Yeah, it was really a nice, and you know, it was the job system from old school. It was Final Fantasy III in the West, and it's really fun. It's really good. If JRPGs are your thing, then yeah, you must play Bravely Default. It might even be worth getting a 3DS or a 2DS now, you know, a cheap one, just to play it. It's such a good JRPG, but it's definitely very much of a JRPG. It's. I would only recommend it if you like that kind of RPG. But another game which I initially skipped over almost and had to come back to was Little Battler's Experience, and I guess it comes from a cartoon which seems to be somewhat popular. At least in Japan. I don't know if it's out in Europe or the US.
I never heard it before. Yeah. So,
but you know, it's such a genius take on toys and games. It's sort of a robotic Pokemon type thing, because the premise of it is you're a kid, of course, and you have in this world you have these battle arenas with tiny robots which are, I guess, the size of a real toy robot, about the size of an adult's hand. And those robots, there are multiple types of robots, multiple models, and you can add little pieces to the robots. You know, there's the helmet, and you can add the hand and the cannon and the thing, and they go out and live a huge adventure. And it seems like the perfect marketing ploy that I would like to be immersed in if I was a 10-year-old kid. It seems genius.
Yeah, now I had an epiphany now. It was announced, I think, a couple of years ago during a Namco Bandai press trips, if I don't remember wrong. So it's a mix. They also have toys and but it didn't, honestly. I remember the early version. It's the same game. Maybe I'm so wrong, but it wasn't too appealing. I don't know, but maybe now it's just better. So.
Yeah, no. Well, I don't know if the game is going to be any good. It's just that the marketing, you know, taking the toys slash games slash cartoon
all together,
it feels like the kind of thing I could completely lose myself into as a kid, but. And, you know, Nintendo does cater to kids. And if you have children, I'm guessing that either you want to show this to them and they will be happy to play with their toys, or you don't because you know they're going to want to buy a million of them and you're going to be, you know, your bank account is going to be depleted very soon. And finally, they teased again the Project Treasure, which is a Namco exclusive for the Wii U, which is a four-player co-op, almost zombie game. It made me think of Left 4 Dead. But I'm not sure what to think of it. It's good that they're getting Wii U exclusives, but...
I don't know. I don't know. I just checked the super short kind of teaser trailer they released.
Yeah, and that's all they had.
Yeah, exactly. It's really hard to say good or bad, but I usually don't trust too much exclusive games on on a Nintendo from third parties on Nintendo home consoles because I don't know. But and this is free to play, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah. Maybe there are a lot of
It's the kind of thing where you want it to be good, but there are some you want to like it and to be excited for it, but there are a lot of red flags.
Yeah, exactly.
But we'll see. I mean, it didn't look bad. It was Wii U level, and it's like more realistic graphics than Nintendo games usually are. So the Wii U limitations show.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I really like the idea of a co-op game. I love co-op more than, you know, usually for Destiny, for example, I enjoy the co-op more than the PvP and things like that. And I think there aren't enough co-op games. But yeah, it didn't seem like it didn't blow me away, let's say.
Exactly.
One thing that blew me away, though, was the report of rumors that those are definitely rumors, but it might be that Nintendo is thinking about using Android for their next gaming system as the OS. And so they're not necessarily going to be using Android, you know, stock Android. They might use Android as a...
custom.
Right, a fork of Android that they're going to do customized to their needs. Some people were very surprised. Some people were happy. Some people were angry. Do you think it would be a good move for them?
I don't know. I think it's really hard now to just imagine what will be. I really can't imagine a Nintendo phone. So I just think maybe a good move because maybe it will be just easier to ask more developers to jump on the new platform. That being said, I think we'll be still... I honestly don't know. I just... I have no idea. But... I think we'll be some kind of exclusive platform, some closed platform again, not just another Android phone or tablet or something like that. So I don't know, could be a good move because it's Android, so there are out there so many developers that already know the system. So it's I don't know, could be a good move. Why not?
As you were saying, I think they would do, even if they end up using Android, it's going to be a fork and it's not going to be compatible simply with every other Android device out there. I don't think they would do that. And I also think they don't necessarily need to reinvent the wheel. You know, Android is a solid OS that is very versatile. So if they build enough on top of it that they make it into an actual Nintendo console, which I can't imagine they wouldn't do. I don't see it being anything but an advantage. It would also make it easier, as you were saying, for developers to probably adapt their games to the Nintendo system. And it might even be a positive thing for Android in general, because it would make another major actor using Android as a basis. And even though the games are not going to be compatible immediately, it's going to be easier. You know, just like the current generation consoles using, basically a PC base for hardware, it makes it easier for developers to adapt their games on multiple platforms. It wouldn't be incoherent for Nintendo to do this with an Android system, and it would make it easier for them to use the existing development and entice developers. And so it's still very unconfirmed, but it wouldn't surprise me, and it wouldn't be a bad move, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly. There are many home consoles out there using operative system based on Unix, but this doesn't mean that it's like Debian or other Linux things. So it's just it's just Android. But then I think they will just take their way.
Yeah, as we were saying, not everyone needs to reinvent the wheel every time they build a car, right? So, Stunfest. Do you know about this festival? It's a French thing. Have you heard about the Stunfest?
No,
it's a small. I'm not surprised you haven't heard of it. I'm thinking not many non-French speaking people have heard of it. It started out as a very tiny gathering of fighting game enthusiasts in the eastern part of France, in the city of Rennes. And it evolved over the past few years up to the point where it's now become pretty sizable gaming festival. It's not a huge conference, but they do have actually presentations and conferences, and they also have a big fighting game tournament. They have games like, Mortal Kombat, Guilty Gear, Tekken, all of the fighting game scene is represented there. And of course, the biggest representative of that scene is Ultra Street Fighter 4. And they had a finals. Actually, they had Japanese players, legendary Japanese players, come Daigo to the Stunfest, including Daigo, which I guess you've heard about.
Yeah, of course.
And there was I wanted to mention it first of all because it's really a fun event and an event that is worth mentioning in other languages as well, but especially because the grand finale for Ultra Street Fighter 4 was one of those incredible moments of esports that makes you understand why esports is so much fun and just as good as any other type of sports. There was a final between Momochi and Daigo. Both of them are excellent Japanese Street Fighter players. Daigo is a legendary player. He is the one that I'm guessing most of the listeners have heard about because they've seen the EVO 2004 moment, EVO being another very famous fighting game tournament. And there was a moment where playing Street Fighter 3, Daigo was fighting Justin Wong, another very famous player. And Justin Wong was playing Chun-Li, and Daigo was playing Ryu and had only a few millimeters of life left. And Justin Wong unleashed an ultra that should have killed Daigo if he had defended every move, because of the special move taking some of your life even if you parry them. But what he did was he actively parried every move, going forward on his joystick for each of the 15 kicks that Chun-Li was hitting him with. So he didn't lose any life. And not only that, by the end, he jumped, parried in the air, landed, and hit with a giant combo that killed Chun-Li. So he was going to lose. It was the round of the entire finals, and he reversed the situation. It was the most incredible fighting game thing you've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah, and he of course had this super timing. And Kotaku published a few days ago an article about Street Fighter parry, talking also about this specific moment. So maybe if your listeners want to read this, it's very, very cool article.
Yeah, it's really a great moment of fighting game. It's probably the most well known in the world. But there was a moment almost like this in the Stunt Fest. Not quite, but almost, because Momochi had won. It was a double elimination tournament, so you had to, if you won everything, you would win. But if you lost once and won everything else, you could get to the finals, and then if you won twice in the finals, you would win. So Daigo was coming out of the loser's bracket, and Momochi was coming out of the winner's bracket. So Momochi had to win one game, and Daigo had to win two games. Each game was composed of three matches, and each match had two rounds. And so Daigo had to basically win all of this twice. And it was, he was getting creamed, and at first Momochi was on a run, he was getting everything right, and Daigo at some point got the fire of the dragon into him, and he started doing things that, you know, he was parrying everything as you should, and getting the right combos in, and he won the first match of the thing with a series of combos that, honestly, I was watching it and I was making so many crazy noises that my wife came to see me to check up on me if I was okay. You know, at some point Daigo was so much in the groove that you could see he could read his opponent like a Jedi master, and he made one of those crazy combos that you would only think of in the perfect situation of training mode. And it was like he wouldn't stop, and the combo lasted for maybe 30 seconds, and it was insane. It was wonderful. So I really wanted to mention it, because that Stunfest moment reminded me of why esports are so great and so exciting. And I know you're a fan of MOBAs and esports.
Yeah, there. Exactly. And StarCraft also. And it's I can understand you, because I'm not so, I really like fighting games and Street Fighter, but I'm not so much into fighting games esports. But I really understand your feelings, because sometimes I'm watching some MOBA tournament, some LOL tournament, or some StarCraft tournament. It's just the same, feeling every time.
Well, if you're interested, or if any of the listeners are interested, just it's on YouTube. I think it's the Three Hit Combo channel. Search for Stuntfest Grand Finale, and you'll find it. It's Daigo versus Momochi, and watch the entire thing. Honestly, even if you don't understand fighting games, it's worth watching. It's about, I don't know, an hour, half an hour or an hour, with all the matches. And so, yeah, now I spoiled to you the fact that Daigo actually ends up winning it. And, you know, he was coming out of the loser's bracket, and he was sort of the legendary player whose time has kind of passed, but he comes back and actually does it. It's incredible. So go watch it. You won't be sorry. But then you will be sorry, because you're going to want to play Ultra Street Fighter 4, and you're going to think, well, I'm going to get the ultimate version on PlayStation 4. That version just came out a week ago, and it's ridden with lots of horrible bugs and problems that basically make it unplayable, at least on a tournament level.
Which is pretty unbelievable if you think that it's I don't know, 4 or 5 years old game. I mean, not the ultra version, but still, it's still Street Fighter 4. So unbelievable. I was really shocked because sometimes you read this news and you try to play the game and you find out these kind of bugs and problems on games that really shouldn't have. So it's, I don't know.
It's, you know, I think it's a case of, it isn't Capcom that developed it. It was a third-party developer contracted by Sony directly. And it seems to be a case of a botched job. And I think Capcom isn't happy about it. And I'm not sure Sony is happy about it. But it's the kind of thing where the bugs seem so obvious. And the stakes are so high because this was supposed to become the official version for the Capcom Pro Tour. And for the Evo tournament and for all of them. And how do you let a game come out with game-breaking bugs like this? There's lag on input. There are invisible projectiles. It's kind of incredible. But, you know, Capcom has said, well, we won't be using that version. We're going to be using the Xbox 360 version now for our Pro Tour. At least that's what's going to happen for the Evo 2015. I was so excited to get it, especially after the Stuntfest final. I might get it anyway because I don't play at a competitive level and I think I would enjoy the game anyway, but it was very disappointing.
Yeah, it is. And it's really hard to understand how it's possible that Capcom didn't check it, Sony didn't check it, and I don't know.
Yeah, and they've been saying, you know, oh, we're going to have a patch maybe, but, you know, hopefully this week the patch will be out. But even the patch, will it fix everything? Probably not. I don't know. Yeah, it was very disappointing and a black eye on Capcom's part because ultimately it's Capcom's responsibility. So, that was definitely a disappointing move. I wanted to mention the Tekken, since we're talking about fighting games. I wanted to mention Tekken 7, and we've seen trailers for different characters for the past few months, and I wanted to mention the fact that those trailers really suck. You know, it's kind of... I'm a big fan of Tekken as well. If you talk about 2D, my game of choice is Street Fighter. If you talk about 3D, it's definitely Tekken. And I've had fun with Tekken for a long time, but it says... To me, it says something about the way Namco or Japanese game companies in general seem to approach their development these days. The trailers for... The characters for Tekken 7 are really just a series of combos with intros and outros for that character from the matches. You know, when they get introduced, they have a few lines that they say, and that's it. And it's very obtuse. It's very hard for people who are not already big fans of these games to understand even the attraction for them.
Yeah, to get the cool of the game.
Right? It's not just me, right? You also don't.
I think it's pretty surprising because Namco, it's still, I think, one of the few Japanese developers that understand also players outside Japan. And sometimes, for example, maybe they're not always great games, but the anime and manga games of Namco have good promotional materials and trailers, so it's pretty surprising that a very well-known kind of IP as Tekken has this kind of not so good trailers.
Yeah, it's very poor production value. I guess maybe, you know, it's coming out on in arcades for now, and maybe they don't want to get the hype too high because it's not been announced on consoles. It's going to come out for sure, but it's not been announced yet. So maybe this is just arcade trailers. But still, they have to know that they're going to be watched globally and that everyone is going to be, you know, very few people are going to play them in the arcades now. So really, this is a pre-hype for the console versions. So anyway, I just wanted to mention it because it's surprising to me. What was also surprising to me, but in a good way, was Guilty Gear Guilty Gear Xrd is going to come out in the West finally. I think, I'm not sure it was...
June 3rd.
There you go. So it's tomorrow. Woohoo!
It's tomorrow, yes.
Yeah, I'm going to be buying it, I think, because Guilty Gear is a
This is also published by Sony in Europe, so you should wait maybe a few hours.
Yeah, maybe. But you know, I think it's developed by Arc Systems, so I think we should be okay.
I was just kidding.
Yeah. But you know, Guilty Gear is a 2D fighting game which has gorgeous HD graphics, and I've always wanted to get a little bit into it. I didn't, but I want to find out more about this game, and especially with Xrd, they did something really interesting in that they decided to create 3D graphics for the game, but sort of 2D-ify them as much as possible. It's cel-shaded, a special kind of cel-shaded 3D graphics that really look 2D, and they went so far as to restrict the number of frames that would be displayed so that it would look like the quote-unquote jerky animation of 2D to keep that very special feel of 2D. And I thought that was really interesting because it gives you, for the intro sequences, you have the 3D effects and it's full 3D models. But for the fighting game itself, it stays very much 2D. And it's such a beautiful game. I want to give it a try.
I played it a few times in the arcades in Japan. And,
Actually.
Yeah, and it's really gorgeous, as you said. And it's really good because nowadays it's pretty hard to make a 2D game with such good animations because it's really expensive. So this 3D solution they found, it's really good, but it's pretty hard. So it was pretty fun because at the last TGS, me and one of my colleagues were just waiting to play the game, and there were so many people watching other people playing. So when we played, it was such a poor show because we really didn't know anything about the game, so just trying to play. And it was the worst match of the day, I think, with many people laughing at us. So it was bad, but the game still, it's really good. So I really want to play it more on PS4.
Yeah. It's it's just PS4, right? I'm not sure it's coming out.
Maybe also PS3.
I don't think it's coming out on Xbox One.
It's a PlayStation exclusive.
Right. Yeah, that's too bad. It's but you know, Sony, Japanese developer, this is a very Japanese game, so
that makes sense.
I played it. I think I can't remember if it was Guilty Gear or BlazBlue, which are you know, two sides of the same coin. When I was in Japan in 2013, and I went into an arcade and got destroyed, but it was fun anyway. And I even made a friend who was telling me which moves were good. So. or maybe, you know, he was telling me the wrong thing and laughing at me afterwards. That's possible, too. We're staying in Japan, but leaving the fighting game scene. And we're going to talk a little bit more about what I think is going to be the final episode in the winter drama series of Konami and their relationship with their fans. So you might remember that last episode we mentioned a comment by Konami's CEO saying that they were focusing on mobile, and that that probably meant that our prophetic announcement that Konami seemed to be getting out of the gaming market actually was realized, in the sense that they were getting out of the console and quote-unquote real games market, and they were just going to be doing silly mobile games from now on. They came back and sent a very long and detailed explanation to Polygon, trying to reach as many people as possible, of how this was actually not them giving up on consoles and PCs. And they provided a full translation of the original article where that quote was taken from, where, honestly, there is a lot of PR-y of PR speak in the entire thing, but it seems like some of their PR speak is the fact that they do not want to get out of the console and PC market. There are phrases like, you know, the PC market is very important to us, and we apologize to our fans if we gave the wrong impression, saying that we were, you know, focusing on mobile. This is not the reason we're doing this. Essentially, what their explanation for it is the fact that they are changing the structure of the company, dividing basically development and management, because in the past, management and development were the two roles were held by the team heads, and that was making it more difficult for them to evolve and innovate in their development. Honestly, knowing with what I know of Japanese companies and society and culture, it seems to me like this wouldn't be the principal reason why they can't move forward. The reason would be their emphasis on consensus, which is crippling for Japanese companies in general and for society in general. But, you know, maybe that can be a reason to sidestep that need for consensus. It's possible. But it doesn't seem like they are... I mean, I don't know. At this point, I don't know what to think anymore. It's the kind of thing where I was thinking Konami was really good at PR for getting all the news out on the, you know, the Konami / Kojima news on Friday, where people wouldn't pay as much attention in the consumer market. But at this point, it's like, well, they've botched everything else, and we're still talking about all of this, and it's been the winter drama saga that it seems like poor communications at this point, right?
Yeah, that's it. And I don't know. It's I think that the point, as the Japanese developers are, is not like important this kind of PR. They just need to announce and release new games. Stop doing like HD versions, which are perfectly okay for me. But one day they will end the HD version.
Well, then they'll do 4K versions.
Yeah. Okay, maybe. But not this generation of consoles, so maybe they will have some few years of problems. I don't know, yeah. It's not... it's bad PR, but again, the problem is not that, is that they need... But this is true also for Capcom, for example, that a few days ago said that they will focus on HD version of games, which is pretty crazy. Hmm. So, yeah, bad PR and just... They don't need to speak. They should make some new games and release new games, and everything will be fine.
Yeah, I think at this point you're right. It's been there's no way to make the situation better anymore. They sort of, I mean, saying actually we were wrong in you know, the way this was interpreted, and he was talking to a financial publication, so it makes sense that he would say things that make financial people happy, right? Mm-hmm. It was saying, you know, when you talk to Nikkei TrendyNet, which is the publication he was talking to, and again, his name is Hideki Hayakawa. When Hayakawa was talking to TrendyNet, of course, he's going to say, mobiles, money, focus, you know. So, okay, you actually went back and clarified what you wanted to say. And you said that, you know, the franchises are very important. You want to be more nimble and able to develop on many different platforms. And you want to have development teams that are capable of doing that. Fine. At this point, stop talking. Nothing you can say is going to make anything better. Just show great, you know, trailers at E3 and then release great games. That's the only thing you can do at this point. So,
yeah, the problem there is that this, as you said, Japanese mind is just avoid any kind of risk. But they will come at the point that they will need to take risk if they want to stay in the market.
Yeah,
at least the console and PC market.
Yeah, and it seems like this could be that. The reorganization of the structure of the company might be because things were just so stale that they had to shake things up in a way that, you know, was significant enough that things would start moving around again. That's the positive version of looking at it. But, you know, one can hope. As we were saying, there's a lot of love for Konami and Konami's IPs in older gamers. So we want to hope. All right, a bunch of smaller news. The Witcher 3 has been out for a couple of weeks, so I don't want to spend too much time on it. But we mentioned last episode, I think, that the reviews are pretty incredible. Actually, it came out before the reviews were available, so everyone loves it. The game seems great. It's already the strongest contender for Game of the Year. You're a PC guy, so this one you must have dove into, I imagine.
Yeah, it's the kind of game any PC player can play, can avoid playing. But I didn't play it for a long time, actually, because I didn't have time yet. But I will do, and my GTX 980 is ready. So, but I don't have the Ti yet, so I will.
Well, you can wait for. They just announced another one, right?
The Ti.
Announced, right? I've been playing it too, and honestly, it gave me a feeling. I understand it's not the same game, but it gave me the feeling of Skyrim. In the sense that this is the kind of game that I can lose myself into, you know, the open world fantasy game. I can just, that lives and breathes, and I can just go around and not really care about the main quest, even though it's fun, but just go and explore and do the side quests. And they're really great. You know, the side quests are all well constructed and make sense. And I remember one of the quests I went to, a very tiny one, was that old woman who wanted her frying pan. And the guy who had borrowed her frying pan was in the house, and it stank, and he was cooking. And you were like, okay, I'm going to go get your frying pan, you silly witch. And you get in the house, and of course, it's not just about the frying pan. The guy who borrowed it is dead, and that's what was stinking. And you investigate around, and you see that the frying pan, he was using the suit from the pan to write letters that he couldn't send. So you can look at the letters and see what they are. And I didn't go on that way, but I imagine it leads to something else. So there aren't any silly FedEx quests, or, you know, not too many of them. There are some, but they're so few that it's just part of a bigger whole. There have been a few issues, you know, with controversy about the fact that the trailer wasn't as good as the one from 2 years ago when it was first introduced. That was, you know, pretty silly.
As usual.
Yes, it's not as beautiful as the when they first saw, produced the initial thing 2 years ago. But since then, we've seen more, and it's just as pretty as those ones. And, you know, another thing that shocked me really was I bought it on PS4, and I apologize to all of my PC Master Race brethren, but I'm traveling and I have my PS4 and not my big PC, and so anyway, I'm in Finland, PS4, and I got, you know, with the game, I opened it and there was like a soundtrack, a map, a compendium, and I was like, wait, what is this? Did I get a collector's edition? What's happening? And I tweeted this, and people on Twitter were just saying me, well, no, this is just CD Projekt. And they love their fans. And I instantly fell in love with the developer, feeling, you know, there was a note thanking me for buying the game. And that's the kind of tiny thing that, you know, anyone could do. But it's just the fact that they do it makes me feel all warm and fuzzy inside for the developer. So
They're super good doing this stuff because this love their fan is of course only marketing and good
obviously
good product making, but they give this idea to customers that they care and they're just good. And the same thing is true for DLCs and new contents for free, and they're just smart. And they are the same guys, I mean not the same guys, but the same company behind GOG, which make good money, I suppose, with the DRM-free idea. So they are smart.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I might be naive, but I think there is some level of love for the medium and the fans. And coming, you know, having worked at a company like Blizzard, of course, all companies in the world are here to make money. And, you know, companies like Blizzard and CD Projekt are no exception. But some companies have a certain respect, you know, even if it's not a respect for the players, there is a certain respect for the product, you know, a love for the craft. And that is something that I think we feel in the end product and even the packaging and all of this. And it's true at Blizzard, it's true at, you know, Valve, it's true at a few companies, and CD Projekt seems to be one of them. It doesn't mean that everything is always perfect, but it means that they strive for it very sincerely. So there is this sincerity that you can feel at CD Projekt, at least in The Witcher 3. So Nintendo is another one of those, and Splatoon is available. I honestly can't decide if I'm excited for it or if it's just hyped because it's a Nintendo game and it would go almost unnoticed if it wasn't.
It's the first time I played the game, it was oh my god, last E3? I think last E3, and it was like okay, interesting. But then after a few more tries and a few hours, I really think I like the game. It's just a Nintendo game because it's super easy to pick up, and it tries to do everything to just level the skills of the player. So if you are a super good FPS player, it doesn't matter. I mean, it matters, of course, but it's not like playing COD, so you can still play at the same level with the newbies. And it's very fun. It's a little tricky to understand, as sometimes Japanese games are, because they have, you know, these levels of unlocks, new maps, new modes, and not everything is unlocked since the beginning. And it will grow in the next few weeks and months. So this is maybe little not so easy to understand for customers, but it's fun. And I don't remember how much is in Italy, but I think it should be like 40 euros. So it's also pretty cheap.
It's not the classic AAA game price. I think they announced in the Nintendo Direct Micro that they were going to unlock the levels more quickly than expected. They said that they were unlocking at least some of the new modes now because, quote unquote, so many players have reached have completed the thing. I think they realized it was not a great way of approaching the thing to gate the content like this. So, I mean, props to Nintendo for trying something new and different. I might almost be tempted to say for once, given the fact that they, you know, this could very easily have been Super Mario FPS. And they went a slightly different direction. And I'm just not sure I want to dive into it. Because, you know, Splatoon, the diving in is funny.
Sorry, it took me like 5 seconds to get it. Sorry.
It's usually the case with my silly jokes. But, Splatoon, it's doing well. It's a great game for... I think it's an FPS... Again, as everything Nintendo does, it's an FPS that is fun to play with kids. The problem is you can only play two-player co-op on the same couch. And that is probably a little bit too bad. But at least, you know, you can play with your kid online and it's a safe environment as everything Nintendo does. So, Splatoon could be fun. Another thing that is slightly different in spirit is Mad Max, which is a sort of open world wasteland quest game that I think pretty much no one cared about it until Fury Road came out, right? and Fury Road turned out to be such an incredible success, at least an incredible vision, that all of a sudden, when Avalanche, who are the developers of Just Cause, I think, reheated the fire under Mad Max, I think it's called Savage Road, they released a trailer and announced the release date of September 1st. Everyone went, you know, you were walking in one direction, not even noticing that that thing happening on the side of your peripheral vision. And all of a sudden, when it popped back up, you're like, oh, wait, what is this? Savage Road could be fun. I mean, I after having seen Fury Road and going to see it again tonight, I'm kind of excited about a Mad Max game when I wasn't at all last year or the year before when it was first announced. Are you excited about it?
I never saw or played the game, but my colleague did just a few days ago. It was last week, and it was pretty happy with the game. So yeah, I mean, Avalanche Studios know how to make open world games, so I don't know. It's still a kind of a tie-in. Well, it's not really, but we can say
that. Yeah, no, it is. It is.
I mean, yeah, it is tie-in, but okay. Made with not with some other tie-in spirit, so it should be better, hopefully. But I mean, could be a good game. Could be a good game. I'm only a little concerned because they are developing at the same time Just Cause 3 and Mad Max, which is maybe good because they can share, you know, technology and that kind of stuff. But at the same game, they should be both pretty big games. So I don't know. But again, my colleague told me that is good. Only he said that I'm trying to remember. He said that the combat system is Batman-like.
Okay, and yet another one of those.
Yeah, exactly. It's good, but it still has some problems with animations. But that being said, he said that it has very good like car combat scenes and this kind of stuff. So should be not too bad.
Yeah, they mentioned the car combat elements, which seem to be pretty prominent, as they should be, in the game. And the publisher is Warner Bros., who also does, you know, Batman and Shadow of Mordor and Mortal Kombat. Honestly, they're becoming a publisher that I trust, and I love the Batman combat system. Mad Max should have a good car combat system, and I trust Warner Bros. I'm willing to give this game a chance. It's surprising even myself, but could be. Shadow of Mordor really came out of left field and ended up being a great game. So yeah, maybe. And by the way, quick side note, do you know how to say Mad Max in Russian? I was in St. Petersburg just a few days ago. It's Bizumny. I think it's Bizumny, Max. Bizumny, which sounds a little bit funny already, especially since in French, bisou means kisses, like a cute kiss. So I like now to think of Mad Max as Kissing Max, which is a lot cuter.
I'm curious, did you change the name of Mad Max in France? Because usually you change every possible name you can change.
We used to. We don't do it so much anymore.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
And Mad Max is still Mad Max. They change all the names in Canada, actually, in French, in Quebec. They change everything because they have to be French.
Yeah,
so I would be curious to know how Mad Max is called in Canadian French. If you know, please let us know in the comments of the show. It would be Max Le Furieux, like Furious Max or something like that. Yeah, actually, Furious Max is... Or you know what? Furious Kissing Max would be the best.
Maybe for the sequel.
Yeah. Talking about... Oh, Furious. It's Furiosa. So it's kind of their kid could be called Furious Kissing Max. If, well, they there isn't even a romance in that thing, which is actually a great part of the movie. But all right, XCOM 2 was announced. It's coming out in November to PC only. I'm not a big XCOM fan, but some of you might be.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the first one.
It's the kind of thing where I want to love all the strategy and the strategic elements of it. And after, you know, 10 minutes, I'm like, just give me a gun and I'll shoot people.
But I don't know. At the same time, it was a really good kind of a reimagination of the traditional XCOM, because it was the original one. It was so hard and so hardcore that, I mean, nowadays with it wasn't fit for some types of modern players. But the Firaxis version was, I think, pretty good. It was easy to pick up, still pretty deep and good. I honestly like it a lot, so I'm pretty happy. I'm not sure it will be, I mean, right now it's exclusively developed for PC, but I think at the end of the day we'll also come out for some consoles.
Very likely.
Why not? Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, if you think you might like this kind of game, XCOM 1 is very cheap now, so you might want to pick it up and check it out. It was definitely a very well-reviewed game when it came out. So, Mobius Final Fantasy, I wanted to touch on this very quickly because I made a big deal out of the game a few months ago. It's coming out June 4th in Japan only, but I was hoping it was going to be a quote-unquote AAA mobile game, and it's going to be a free-to-play title. So that was a little bit disappointing. It doesn't mean it's going to be bad, but it gives me pause, as all free-to-play titles do. It does seem like a very high production value Final Fantasy game on mobile, so I'm not losing hope yet, but we'll see. We'll have to see what happens when it comes out in in the West. Being free-to-play was a little bit of a disappointment. As we were saying, the NVIDIA GeForce 980 Ti was announced. It does wonders for VR. As we know, VR 2016 is probably going to be the year of VR. Would you recommend that card to anyone? Seriously, it must be like, what, $500, $600?
€605, I think it's the official price.
Jeez.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's a really good card, and we reviewed it was yesterday. It's a really good card. There are just two things to consider, I think. The first one is that AMD will announce new things in the next few weeks, so maybe someone want just to wait a little bit more. And it's, as we say, the pretty expensive card, so if you just want to play at 1080p, maybe you can just take something cheaper like a 970. But if you aim to 4K, if you want to be VR ready, whatever it means, yeah, it's of course a really good it's a really good option, because it's basically the same as in terms of performances with video games, is the same as a Titan, you know, the Titan X card.
Yeah,
but it's much cheaper. So yeah, it's good. It's really high end. So, but probably if you want this type of card, you already know it's for you. So
that's true. I think for everyone else, the 970, which is the minimum requirement for the Oculus Rift, by the way, is probably going to be the way to go. And I think I'm going to get one when I get back to France. You were saying they might announce things in the next few days?
Yeah, AMD will announce something in the next few days or weeks.
Okay. I think the way I look at it with all these announcements is I'm hoping the 970 is going to get a little bit cheaper. So we'll see. A couple of quick items. League of Legends is introducing almost instant punishment for verbal harassment. So that's always a good thing to have. Hopefully the automated system, once it gets automated, will not have too many false positives. But I you know, the There's something else that I want to link this to. It's Twitch banning adult-only rated games on streaming. In the past, they were selecting which games were okay and which games were not okay to stream. And now they're just going to be banning all of the adult-only games. It's not going to change much. The game Hatred... Is going to be affected?
Yeah, exactly. It's basically in a hatred ad hoc kind of new decision. New Twitch law.
Yeah. And it also allows them to not have to evaluate each game individually. This is just now the ESRB that says if this is, we adhere to the ESRB standard, which, you know, I think it's fine. Some people were a little bit angry about it. I think it's at some point, you know, video games are growing up and we have to get serious about these kinds of things. The important thing is that we don't go overboard and don't sanitize everything. And this doesn't seem like it is doing that. So,
yeah, it's not a big deal, honestly. I think Hatred developers will be more than happy because
publicity,
so,
right?
Yeah, exactly. So.
Yeah, the game you can't stream on Twitch.
Exactly.
And finally, before we get into our E3 hype and a few, not predictions, but thoughts, Windows 10 is going to be released on July 29. This is coming a lot sooner than I had anticipated. And it's going to do a few things for PC gaming and for Xbox, Actually, there's going to be Xbox One to PC streaming. DirectX 12, which once the games that are DirectX 12 compatible come out, they will squeeze out a lot more out of our existing systems. So the new games should have even better graphics than the ones that currently exist. For the same hardware. And I am going to wait a little bit before I update to Windows 10 because I want to make sure it works with everything, you know, my systems. But you know, I'm Windows 10 looks like the definitive Windows. It's like the Game of the Year edition, OS of the Year edition. It has everything you want from the previous releases, right?
Yeah, I think you can guess that because they just jumped the 9 and so it's 10.
That means it's better.
And I think they just want a platform to maybe change in future the kind of development and releases of this kind of operative system. So it will be a new platform. And honestly, I'm not excited because it's hard to be excited for something like this. But already 8.1 was pretty good, so why not? It's a solid operative system and doesn't have the problems used to have. So why not?
Yeah. I'm happy about it. Personally, I'm enough of a geek and a nerd that I'm actually excited about Windows 10. So. All right, we'll finish the episode with a few thoughts about E3. There were a bunch of trailers being shown. There's Doom being teased, Rise of the Tomb Raider, which I have huge hopes for. There's Sony, which is teasing things about virtual reality. There's going to be an Oculus Rift event before E3 on June 11. We have the Bethesda conference that is going to be probably showing Fallout 4. Maybe even a new Elder Scrolls title. That's what I'm really hoping for, but
I don't know. In the same year, the Elder Scrolls and Fallout.
That might be too much. And there's The Witcher 3 now anyway, so we're fed.
You don't need the new Elder Scrolls.
There's something. I think if there's one thing I'm really hoping for, it's the fact that we get a slim version of the Xbox One at the end of the year. Or even right after E3, there's a new Xbox One controller, which the only new thing is the fact that it uses a headphone jack instead of a proprietary jack. But that might mean that there's a whole hardware refresh coming out without a huge power brick for the Xbox One. That, if there's one thing I'm hoping for at E3, it's that. How likely do you think that is? Very unlikely.
I don't know. It's possible, of course. After a couple of years, they can use different kind of building process, so it can get cheaper to make also a smaller console. I don't know. It's possible. Honestly, I don't know how possible.
I think from a marketing standpoint, it would make sense as well. It's just, you know, it's the new one. Just now, just break down and get it. It's the new one. You want it. You know you do.
Yeah. We know it works, this kind of thing. So it will happen this year or next year. I don't know. But about E3, usually I'm not so hyped because after, I don't know, eight E3, something like that, it's just... every year the same thing, but this year should be pretty good. I don't want to say that too loudly because maybe it will not be, but this year should be pretty cool, hopefully.
So what are you hoping for?
Okay, first we have a PC conference.
So okay, explain to me why we need a PC conference. But PC is all over E3 anyway, right?
Yeah, I can't explain because we don't need it. I don't know what it means, a PC conference, but I have a ticket, I have an invitation for it, so I will probably go. Okay. Me or one of my colleagues. But I don't know. Honestly, Fallout, it's enough for me. And Xbox and Microsoft has to have a good conference, and more than Sony probably. They really need something really good, some good announcements. And I don't know, there are just many games that will be announced or shown. I honestly, the only game I'm not so hyped is Doom, because I'm not a huge fan of the last ID games. But apart from that, there will be some good stuff.
So you're not hoping for incredible announcements for VR, for example, for Project Morpheus? Or
VR, it's pretty, I don't know, it's a pretty tough kind of topic because, yes, of course, Sony will announce something, Oculus will announce something, but I don't see like huge IPs going to VR or huge things because there are just not enough. There are no kind of VR hardware out there. But also, when next year will come out, it will take time to see if there will be it. They will be a huge success or not. So I don't know. I think will be smaller games, tech demos, indies, and that kind of stuff. But
I have to say, I'm a little bit... I don't think VR is going to be great this year. I think it's going to be interesting for hardware, but next year is when we're going to have VR. Even whatever gets announced in VR this year is probably going to end up being underwhelming. Because we don't know how to use the VR hardware anymore. We don't even know what it should be. But next year could be very interesting. You know, I'm not sure what to expect, really. I'm hoping that Microsoft is going to come out with lots of fun first-party exclusives that are going to justify me buying an Xbox One. I think I would do it anyway for Rise of the Tomb Raider, which is a cool exclusive already. But I want to be excited about the Xbox One. And I'm not sure that... Sony has sort of said almost, well, you know, this year wasn't great for first-party exclusives. We might get stuff next year, but not really. And I can't be excited for Project Morpheus yet because of the reasons we were mentioning. So I'm going in with pretty low-ish expectations, but I want to be surprised. So maybe that's a good combination.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, again, as regarding the VR stuff, I'm not sure, but regarding games, I think it will be a good E3.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll see. I'm probably going to be doing some live streaming for E3 with Scott Johnson, my good friend from the Frog Pants Network. We were thinking, at least for the big day, we're going to be trying to stream. I will be deep in the Finnish countryside, but I will have a good internet connection, hopefully, so that should be okay. But we're going to try to stream and comment and make this into the fun party that it is for all of us video games fan, and hopefully you can come along and have fun with us. It's going to be a very long thing if we do it, because the conferences are spread for the, I think it's the Tuesday. Is it the Monday or the Tuesday? No, it's the Monday.
The Monday, yeah.
Yeah, with Microsoft, EA, Ubisoft, and Sony, which are the big ones. On the day before, there's Bethesda, and on the day after, there's Nintendo, Square Enix, and the fabled PC Gaming Conference, which is 3 hours long. but we'll see. I think at least for the Monday, we'll do a stream, and it might take me into the middle of the night for the Sony conference, but we'll see, and hopefully you will be able to enjoy all of this with us. I guess that's it. That's going to be it for the show today. Need for Speed Reboot, I really don't think we need to talk about. We'll see at E3. Destiny House of Wolves, the new expansion is fun. It's more Destiny, but that is not very surprising to anyone. And I think that's about it. Thank you so much, Umberto, for being with us. You're leaving in a few days, I guess, for E3. Are you going to go for the Oculus conference or just for the Bethesda one?
I actually don't remember if we have been invited to the Oculus conference, but I honestly don't know. I will. My flight will be on next Saturday.
Next Saturday, okay.
Yeah, I mean, not this one, the other.
So I think you're going to miss the Oculus one.
It's probably on the 11th. Yes, because on the 11th, so I will miss it. Yeah.
So you're going to have the fun experience of landing and immediately almost jumping into the conferences. That's going to be fun.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being on. Can you tell the good folks on the internet where they can follow along? And I guess are you the kind of person who tweets all the time about everything?
I used to be. It's a few months I'm not doing it. But my Twitter is @u_moyoli. And of course, I write for multiplayer.at, which is not interesting if you don't speak Italian.
But surely for E3, you're going to start tweeting a lot again to get people excited, right?
Yes, I have to. So.
All right. So @u_moyoli on Twitter, and multiplayer.it if you want to learn about gaming in Italian.
Exactly.
Thanks so much. And for me, it's NotPatrick on Twitter. You can also find the show at FrenchSpin.com. And we will also be there for E3, as I was mentioning. Hopefully, we'll have not only the streaming of everything, the comments on the streaming, but also we will have a special episode with Scott after E3 is done. So you will have a giant summary of a mix between the Boop Show and Pixels, and we'll do the summary, so if you've missed anything, you can listen in one handy place to get all the news. So thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you at E3. Bye!
Ciao!